The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Low finishers. That's what we're talking about today on the Fantasy Football Today podcast. I'm Jamie Eisenberg. That's Dave Richard. That's Dan Schneier. As you can see, our buddy Adam Azer taking the day off today, so we'll fill in for him. Hopefully, we won't screw this up and give you a fun show as we always do here on FFT. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Hit the like button as always. We appreciate it. And hopefully, for those of you listening on audio, we don't sound too horrible with our esteemed leader not here. Dan's on the toilet. Dave's in the office. We're good to go. Guys, how's your Thursday treating you so far?
Very well. I'm having a good day over here. It's not nice outside by me because you guys live in the luxury, lap of luxury down there in Florida. But as usual, I have my toilet behind me. So, and anytime I need to go, I'm good to go.
What a start. Like, imagine if people are listening for the very first time and they're not getting the joke about Dan, or they don't watch on YouTube. Jamie, you'll appreciate this. I don't know if you'll appreciate this, but my back's out.
Oh,
I'm sitting on an ice pack right now.
No.
First time in like, I honestly, Jamie, you tell me, when's the last time? It's got to be at least 5 years since it happened.
Are you a lower back out kind of guy?
Yeah, I was for a long time, and then I didn't, and now it's back. So I'm old AF, and my back is sore. I know how to handle it. And hopefully I'll be back up and moving at a normal speed in like a week. But Jamie knows what I look like when I walk, when my back's out.
Oh, no.
It's very senior-esque.
Well, it's. I feel bad for you, so I hope you feel better. But it is appropriate for today's topic because we're talking about slow finishers, guys that have had some second-half issues, guys like Nick Chubb, at least this past season in 2022. Nick Chubb, DeAndre Swift, Chris Olave, a couple guys that we'll touch on, Dallas Goedert, Ramondre Stevenson. So we'll dive into those guys. Got a lot of news and notes to get to as well. But obviously, you know we like to promote our other shows here, so make sure you're checking out the first from the – guys from the Pick Six podcast, from the First Pick podcast. You know Ryan Wilson is one of the hosts of the Pick Six podcast there and does FFT appearances on our show as well. Rick Spielman, former Vikings general manager. Those guys are getting you set for the NFL draft for sure. He drafted guys for the Vikings like Adrian Peterson, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson. So a big part of the fantasy community as well. So those guys have a brand new podcast. It's called focused on the NFL draft called With the First Pick. They're at the NFL Combine right now, so they're going to have a lot of news and notes coming out of that, but they'll give you some mock drafts, they'll give you a lot of player profiles, and they'll get you set for the upcoming NFL draft. So it's a great listen. Rick and Ryan do a fantastic job again with the First Pick podcast. Check it out wherever podcasts are found. Before we get into the news, before we get into the topic of today with the second half poor finishers, the second half slumpers, as Adam called them, got a lot of news and notes to get to as well. So let's start with what Ravens general manager Eric DaCosta said about Lamar Jackson, that they expect to have him back. He wants him back. Said you don't have a team if you don't have a quarterback. So, Dave, at this point for dynasty managers with Lamar Jackson or just looking ahead to the upcoming season with Lamar Jackson, is he locked in now as a potential top five guy thinking that he's going to play with Baltimore? Or is there still a little uncertainty knowing that he may drag this out wanting that guaranteed money?
Well, he's going to get a guaranteed year if they franchise him. So that, and it's going to be a lot of money, especially if they use the exclusive tag. It'll be north of $40 million. So I think he'll be relatively happy with that, but very unhappy with the idea of, you know, not having that long-term deal, not having the deal that Deshaun Watson had. I don't know if I'm ready to call him top five. there's still going to be some things to shake out. You want to call them top seven? I'm good with it. Top five? Not yet. I'm not there yet.
There's way too much. There's way too much risk in his profile for me to go top five right now. For starters, it's the injury risk, what we've seen with our own eyes. But secondly, it's the risk of that Ravens offensive line. I know they drafted a center, Linderbaum, in the first round last year, and he was pretty good. But that Ravens offensive line has been downgraded for a few years now. It hasn't been the same as what it was. Ronnie Staley in and out of the lineup. They've been worse at guard. I know Zeitler's over there. He's okay. So that scares me. And then just the idea of going to a new offensive system for the first time in Lamar Jackson's career. A lot of what he did from a fantasy standpoint for it was so successful during his MVP season was based, in my mind, on Roman's scheme and Roman's skill set at the time calling those plays. I know it fizzled out there for Greg Roman. Now they're trying to change things, but that doesn't make me all like excited about it. It makes me a little nervous about it. So I think this is a risky profile for a top five quarterback.
I think the one thing, though, if you're looking at it from a dynasty perspective, it's still a good time maybe to get him while his value is a little bit lower because of the uncertainty. So if you are in the market to try and get Lamar Jackson, you still have to pay a pretty penny, but probably a little bit cheaper than you would have gotten him certainly a year ago or even a couple years ago. Dan, I'm sure as a NFC East guy, you will like this quote from Mike McCarthy, who sounds like he's taking football back several years. Here's what he said at the NFL Combine. I've been where Kellen Moore has been. Kellen wants to light the scoreboard up, but I want to run the damn ball so I can rest my defense. I think when you're a coordinator, you know, but you're in charge of the offense. Being a head coach and a play caller, you're a little more in tune with everything. I don't desire to be the number one offense in the league. I want to be the number one team in the league with a number of wins and a championship. And if we got to give up some production and take care of the ball better to get that, then that's what we'll do because we have a really good defense. So obviously he wants to run the ball more. We kind of got that impression when they let Kellen Moore leave to go to the Chargers. So we don't know who the running back is going to be. Ezekiel Elliott may not be back with the team. If he is, that's probably a bad thing for that Cowboys offense and a bad thing for fantasy managers. Tony Pollard is a free agent. And as part of this, Stephen Jones, the son of Jerry Jones, who's part of the personnel staff there, said that they're not opposed to taking a running back early in the NFL draft. So looking at this right now, the starting running back, Dan, for the Cowboys, is this somebody that we're going to rush up draft boards if they go and get somebody in the draft or if they bring back Tony Pollard? We've talked about this on the show that he could be a first-round pick. If it's Zeke and only Zeke, I don't know how many people are going to be excited about that, but just your take on the Cowboys' backfield right now, knowing that this is what Mike McCarthy's approach seems to be.
It's going to go the opposite way for me. When it comes to running games in fantasy football, I am more likely to follow a team that is scoring a lot and moving the ball a lot than a team that's committing to the run, quote unquote, because I think the first way will lead to more scoring for the running backs, mostly by having more red zone opportunities. And I've seen it fizzle out already with Mike McCarthy calling the plays and leading the rounds. He literally almost ended the career of one of the most generational arm talents we've seen in the, at least in my lifetime, in Aaron Rodgers. They had to revive it with by moving on from him. So this doesn't make me happy. I also feel like that Cowboys offensive line, Tyler Smith was a good pick last year. It's working out, but everyone else on that line is getting older and they're not as effective as they used to be. So I don't like this at all for the Cowboys fantasy players.
Dave, the flip side of this with the passing game, how much does this make you a little bit concerned about the ceiling for CeeDee Lamb, the ceiling for Dak Prescott? We don't know if Dalton Schultz is coming back. Assume right now Michael Gallup's the number two receiver there, but just the passing game, knowing that Kellen Moore wanted to light up the scoreboard. It was great. Well, Mike McCarthy apparently doesn't believe that. I guess he didn't watch the Chiefs. Your thoughts just on the passing game there in Dallas?
He says it like the Cowboys were one of the pass-heaviest teams in the league last year. They threw the ball 52.3% of the time. They were actually 10th in run rate last year at 47.7%, and he wants to run it more. I think it's more of a statement about him trying to just win the time of possession. They were 24th there, 29-20. I think that's what he's looking to do. This might be more of a sign that they're going to try and slow down their offense and not play as much fast pace up tempo like a lot of other teams do. So
that's horrible for fantasy.
That's what I think will end up happening. I'd be surprised if they were even more run heavy next year and they were like at 50% run and 50% pass. That would surprise me. But what wouldn't surprise me if they were, you know, bottom 10 in plays per game. They were top 10 in plays per game this past year. I bet that's the strategy now. They're going to try and slow things down a little bit more and not rush it on the field.
A couple of news items that we'll get to. Cardinals head coach Jonathan Gannon saying that He's not sure if DeAndre Hopkins will be on the team in 2023. That's clearly been sort of the sentiment following last season. So we'll find out where he goes. That will clearly determine his fantasy value. Panthers head coach Frank Reich said Derek Carr is still in his prime and has a five-year window. I'm not sure if any of us will be buying that.
Adam will.
And our resident Derek Carr guy not on the show today, and Adam Mazur. So we'll see where Derek Carr ends up. He did have meetings with the Panthers, with the Saints, and with the Jets in Indianapolis. So seems as if it's a three-team race to acquire Derek Carr. We'll find out again probably in a couple weeks where Derek Carr will be playing. This is interesting. The Chargers, Tom Telesco, the general manager, they're saying they're going to keep Keenan Allen, expecting to have him on the roster. So, Dave, that's great for Justin Herbert. It's probably still very good for Keenan Allen. But just in terms of the Chargers passing game, where do you come out on this news that Keenan Allen stays there and what that means for maybe the limited upside of Joshua Palmer?
Yeah, it's bad news for Joshua Palmer. It's really good news for Keenan Allen, because as long as he's healthy, he's got a role in that offense. He should still be able to command plenty of targets. I think he goes back up to being in that number two receiver range in full PPR. I don't know if he'll be that high in non-PPR. And hey, this is the flip side of the Mike McCarthy news. If he got rid of Kellen Moore because he threw too much, well, that's going to be really good for the Chargers. But I think we knew that already.
Yes.
LA was already second in the league in pass rate at 65%. So there should be a lot of opportunities for Keenan Allen. Should be a lot of opportunities for Mike Williams. Don't think it's going to be a very good thing for Joshua Palmer, but Palmer is still worth drafting. He's going to be a late round pick.
Yep, should be fun to see. And again, we'll see what the contract, how it's reworked, because it's a very high cap number for Keenan Allen. So I'm sure that will be the following news that we get in the next couple of weeks. Dolphins GM Chris Greer said there's some concerns about Tua Tagovailoa's durability. Understandably so. They have until May 1st to make a decision on his fifth-year option. He also said, Chris Greer, that the Dolphins are open to bringing back Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson. So we'll see what happens there. That's a team that you see a lot of potential free agents going to, or a free agent going to, or maybe the Dolphins will be in the draft market to get a running back. But we could see maybe one of these guys paired with a young running back coming back there. So again, something to keep an eye on moving forward. Lions general manager Brad Holmes said both the team and Jamal Williams are interested in a return this season. Williams is a free agent. And then also, I don't know if you guys talked about this on Wednesday, but what Dan Campbell said about DeAndre Swift and limiting his workload. So, Dan, if Williams comes back and Swift is still in this limited role to whatever extent, Campbell said, if you guys didn't talk about this again, it was we had a plan in place for him last year in terms of his workload. We'll probably have another similar plan. They want to keep him healthy and keep him on the field. So when you look at this Lions backfield, Dan, what's your approach to that situation?
Yeah, my approach to that situation is similar to what it was last year. Look, everything on paper screams that DeAndre Swift is prime for this breakout. He has the best play caller in the NFL and Ben Johnson, a great offensive line, but they don't use him in the red zone and they want to continue to limit him. So he's clearly never going to be that workhorse that we need him to be for fantasy football success. And I don't want to overstate the Lions offense. It's not like the biggest juggernaut in football, despite having a great O-line and play caller. So I'm going to stay away from DeAndre Swift. His price will always rise to a point where it's not going to be good for me. And maybe Jamal Williams is someone I have to consider if I'm really going with that zero running back approach that I sometimes tend to use, or even the hero running back approach.
Touchdowns, and more touchdowns.
Yeah.
Jamal Williams, I think he either led the NFL in rushing touchdowns or he was tied for first in
crazy.
Rushing touchdowns. It's just amazing the year that he had, and I think staying in Detroit would be the best thing for him. Again, not the best thing for DeAndre Swift. Last news item, we don't need to touch on this one, but Colts general manager Chris Ballard saying that the Colts have not decided yet on Matt Ryan's future. We know the Colts are going to find a new quarterback after what happened last year. I'm sure that's something that they will address in the NFL draft. All right, we'll take a quick break right now. We come back and get into the second half slow finishers and some problems for fantasy managers with some of the stars that did not have good second half seasons in 2022.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
All right, and we're back. So let's talk about some of these finishers. So the guys, again, that we're looking at here, we're talking about Nick Chubb. We're talking about Chris Olave, DeAndre Swift in particular, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Dallas Goedert, Ramondre Stevenson, Alvin Kamara, Jalen Waddle, David Njoku. I'm not sure we'll get to all of them in length, but those are the players that we're looking at. So, Dave, I'll start with you. Of those guys, and I think you have the names in front of you, so if you need me to repeat it, I can, but which one concerned you the most of their second half slow finish to what could be hopefully – a rebirth or getting back on track in 2023?
Can I pick two or do I got to give you one?
Sure, you can pick two.
I'm going to put two because they're both older running backs. Alvin Kamara and Nick Chubb are the two that worry me. Kamara a little more so than Chubb, but they're kind of in the same vein just because of their age and because of what we saw last year. In the case of Chubb, he averaged 12.2 PPR points per game once Deshaun Watson came back. That includes 23.2 PPR points in week 18. Before that game, it was 10 flat. 10.0 PPR points per game for Nick Chubb. Was this just him getting used to the offense? Was it the offense changing with Watson and defenses kind of adjusting and the Browns not able to counterpunch? I'm not sure. It makes me a little nervous about Chubb. And I still think I'm going to take him in round two, late round two in full PPR. But it's something that I've got to keep in mind, and it's something that, honestly, I might be able to ask about this offseason and get an idea of how Cleveland might rectify it for 2023. Kamara is a pretty obvious story in this case. 10.7 PPR points per game in his final eight. That's bad for him. He averaged 22.3 in weeks 5 through 9. That's a little bit better than what you'd expect from A to the K, but we know that there's a suspension looming. We don't know how long it is. The offense is changing, and it looks like without having Drew Brees there or maybe any quarterback that, you know, loves to throw to the running back and is part of a consistent game plan, he's going to struggle. And then you tack Taysom Hill on top of that, and he's losing short yardage touchdowns. I'm nervous to take Alvin Kamara, regardless of round. We're so used to taking him in, like, round one or round maybe early round two last year. Jamie, Dan, I've got him in round 5 right now. Wow. I'm staying away. I know that there's high upside, but with suspension and everything else I talked about, Taysom Hill, the quarterbacks, the offense, and him getting older, he's a pass.
Dan, what about you? Same question. Who concerns you the most?
I mean, Dave took the two that definitely concerned me the most. So in honor of not just repeating what Dave said, I'll go with kind of my third and fourth options. One we already discussed, but I want to just touch on again, DeAndre Swift. Again, last year was supposed to be the breakout year for Swift. He was, a lot of fantasy analysts were in on him. They felt like he was the best value in that range that Dave is discussing, that 1-2 turn. And he got like the best scenario that could have played out for him, a breakout from the offensive system standpoint, from a play calling standpoint, from a design standpoint. The offensive line hit its peak, and yet what happened with DeAndre Swift? He still didn't reach his potential that we've been talking about. So to me, there isn't much of a case left for him. And I know when same thing will happen again this year. He'll get boosted up draft boards and probably not to that same range, but maybe into the mid two range. So after those two would be Swift. And then one more I might want to throw on there here. I'm just looking at our list of guys would probably be, we can go here with, I like some of these guys, so I probably have the opposite.
Well, I mean, one is fine. I mean, you don't have to be concerned about all these guys the same length, but
yeah, some of these guys I like running actually
make a lot of sense. Now of the list again, and I'll read the names to you guys. Sure. So it's Nick Chubb, DeAndre Swift, Chris Olave, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Dallas Goedert, Ramondre Stevenson, Alvin Kamara, Jalen Waddle, David Njoku. Of the ones that struggled in the second half, and again, we'll get more in depth on why they struggled, but of the ones who struggled, which one of those do you say, okay, not even a big deal, I'm not even worried about it, their second half struggles, just a byproduct of bad play, injuries, things around them falling apart? Dan, I'll start with you. None of these guys concern you. You're not worried about their second half struggles at all.
So it's one you actually didn't mention, but we have him in the notes, and he did struggle in the second half. It's Chris Olave, the rookie wide receiver from the Saints. I think for me with Olave, a lot of those second half struggles were quarterback play related. And in a lot of ways, people say, oh, did he hit the rookie wall? I don't think so. When I watched him, he still looked like the same receiver who has that ability to separate both over the top and in the intermediate range. And I think what happened with the Saints there is they got into a weird kind of area of the season where they were just like, we can grind these wins out like 10 to 13 to 10. They did one against Philly where they had Gardner Minshew, where they had an upset there, and it was just like a weird game. And so I think that will change this offseason when they change and upgrade at quarterback, and that will be a big help for Olave. The talent is there. The air yards were there. There were so many factors in his profile as far as what kind of player he is that get me excited about him. And I think all the reasons, like the second half struggle, actually helped keep his ADP down a little bit for some of those rookies. So he's somebody I'll definitely be buying in.
Dave?
So just in react, I would, my knee-jerk reaction was to say Olave as well, but Dan brought up how the Saints won games last year and that grind it out, lean on your defense type of style. For this episode, we can call it the Mike McCarthy style, because I think that's what McCarthy's looking for in Dallas. But if they win with that and they don't have a great solution at quarterback this offseason,
yeah,
they might do that again. And that could hurt Chris Olave becoming a top 12 receiver. So we're drafting him somewhere between like wide receiver 15 and 24 off the board. And I feel like we're drafting him a little bit too close to his ceiling, but it also has to be said, he averaged 14 and a half PPR points in his first 10 games in the National Football League. And then he fell below 9 in his final 6. So if it's going to be more like those final 6, and he was dealing with some injuries too, he missed a game with an injury. If it's going to be like that, he's going to be a bust. It's hard to see him being a bust though, because of that speed and just that overall smoothness, that instant acceleration that he has.
Yeah.
I want to see who's sharing the backfield with Ramondre Stevenson in New England. And if it's nobody of major significance, then I bet we see the guy that we saw in weeks 3 through 9. Jamie, do you remember what he averaged in those weeks when he was basically like dominating the touches in that backfield in New England?
No, but that was with Damian Harris hurt, and it was certainly significant. A big part of it was his work in the passing game, which is,
yes,
you know, what kind of led to his second half struggles, which is what's the concern. Is he going to be that guy? We spent some time talking about Pierre Strong and what his potential role could be in the passing game, or is there somebody else brought in? I would not be surprised. I think, if I'm not mistaken, before Fournette re-signed with Tampa Bay or ended up in Tampa Bay, Belichick was
talked with them. Sure did.
So that could be a pairing that we see if he decides to go there and sort of be the complement to Ramondre Stevenson. So, yeah, I think that's a fair one.
He averaged 19.8 PPR points per game, and he had a ton of games with just mega targets. And we love that. We want that to happen. But he averaged 12.4 in his final 8. I don't have how many targets per game he had in those final 8. I can look it up for you, or one of you can look it up. But I don't think he was particularly high. And I wonder if that's a reflection of what the coaches think of him, where they see Ramondre and they go, that guy's got to be our 1A, the running downs back, the short yardage goal line guy. We know he can play on third downs. We know that we can throw to him. We can throw to him on first and second down too. but not on third downs. They've consistently used a separate back on third downs. They've rarely, I think Corey Dillon might have been the last guy where when there haven't been injuries, they've relied on a three down guy in that backfield. So I'm real curious to see the moves that the Patriots make at running back. Fournette does make sense. They love getting those veteran guys who can come in and play. And if it's Fournette, we know that Fournette can play three downs as well. He may end up being the guy that plays in those passing down situations.
And I almost view it, what you said, Dave, as like a reflection of the coaching staff in a different way. Like last year, the Patriots had whatever was going on there, a former defensive coordinator slash head coach running an offense with help from a special teams coordinator slash head coach in Joe Judge and Patricia. So is it a reflection of what they view in the player, or is it just coaches over their heads? And now they have competent coaching and coordinating that offense. And I think potentially it could lead to them realizing like, hey, Ramondre Stevenson is arguably our best playmaker on offense, especially if Jacoby Myers leaves in free agency, and he's supposed to get an insane contract this free agency just based on the market. So that could almost lead me to believe he has more in store for him. And one thing that's been constant about the Patriots through the years, no matter how many coordinators they've changed, no matter how many running backs have come through, that run game has always worked. They do a really good job coaching up the blocking there with the offensive line. They let tons of guys who are high name offensive linemen hit free agency, and then they replace them like this. And so I think whatever they're doing, it's a power gap system. It works. So I feel confident about Ramondre pretty much, unless they draft somebody high, which they're probably not going to do at running back.
I think just in terms of these guys here, I'm going to give you their potential draft round, and you tell me good value or bad value. Then we'll get more in depth on this. But
okay.
Adam wanted to know who could present the greatest draft value based on their bad finishes. So Nick Chubb, I think, and we've seen in our drafts, goes late round two. Good value, bad value, fine.
Fine.
I'm on potential good value.
Potential good value, fine. Okay, so you're okay with that as a bad second. I finished, guy bouncing back. DeAndre Swift, let's say round three.
Bad for me.
Agreed, bad.
What about round four?
How late are we talking?
Let's say
one of the last 45.
I'm staying bad.
I'll lean fine.
Chris Olave, pick 38.
Fine. Agreed. But I can see the case for bad for sure, that high.
Right. Bad quarterback, then it could be a problem.
Could Donovan also be Peoples really good Jones, if it's a good quarterback.
Who, you know, let's say round seven.
Who was the guy you said? Don Peoples Jones?
Donovan Peoples Jones.
No, that's bad.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Round 10?
Seven? You're getting a lot closer to okay. Maybe even good value in round 10.
I think people are going to get excited just based on Deshaun Watson's full offseason as a second guy.
Right.
Dallas Goedert, round five.
No, that's bad.
We just did a draft where he was picked in round three. The listeners took him in round three.
Well, that was an auto pick, though.
It's more fun to say that.
Let's say round
pick round three. I think round five is still a bad pick. I think that's still too high.
There's just the problem with Goddard is I love the talent, but it's how does that situation get better from a fantasy standpoint unless there's injuries?
There you go.
Well, I mean, he was still pretty good, though, when all those other guys were there. So we'll get into that a little bit.
Relative to tight ends, for sure, he was good.
Yes, that's fair.
Ramondre Stevenson, round three.
Oh, no, that's not going to be good. You know, I like Stevenson, but it's round three? No.
I think that's pretty good.
I can't do three.
If he's the only guy there, he's going to go in round two.
He's going to go. He might go in round one, James.
He'll never be the only guy there, though, in a Belichick backfield.
Alvin Kamara, you said round five, Dave. I'll say round four. So round four is no good for you. Let's assume no suspension.
Oh, then maybe round four would be okay.
I'm still on bad. I've been off Kamara. I didn't draft Kamara anywhere last year. I've been off Kamara for a while.
Jaylen Waddle, round two.
That's so dependent on the Tua situation.
Let's say Tua's the quarterback.
But you know what?
If Tua's the quarterback and he's coming in, yeah, that's the problem. Like, he's coming in fine and healthy, but one concussion and that's it. But his numbers with Tua last year versus numbers without Tua are the most insane difference of any, I think, fantasy player. It's like 22.6 with Tua. Don't quote me on that, but it's in the 20s. And without him, it's like in the 8s. So points per game. So if Tua's coming in fully healthy, I don't think it's bad value, but it's just like, how long can Tua last? I don't know.
Well, what if
What
if the Dolphins end up getting a really nice backup quarterback?
Yes. Okay. That's the route.
Then you might feel a little bit better. Like, what if
that's the route?
If you call it Jameis Winston a really nice backup quarterback, you might feel better about it.
Or even a Jacoby Brissett to some extent is interesting.
That would be something.
Not great, yeah. But he helped Cooper.
Well, I mean, look, it's
at times.
We don't know what these guys would have done over a full span of games that Tua missed if Teddy was still healthy, because Teddy missed a lot of time.
True.
And obviously he's a competent backup. It's not, you know, Skylar Thompson and just the, you know, the youth of what was there. It could be, you know, and Andy Dalton is brought in. And Jacoby Brissett, like you mentioned, I don't know if he wants to come back to Miami, but, you know, they could give themselves, you know, if this guy doesn't land a starting spot, Baker Mayfield, you know, he could look at it and say, okay, Tua is not going to play a full season. I'm going to go to a situation like that. You know, it could be any one of those type of quarterbacks. So, we'll dive into that a little bit more. And then David Njoku is probably going to be, let's say, somewhere between tight end 10 and tight end 12. I'll say round 10 for him.
Fine.
I guess that's fine.
So the best value of these guys that we mentioned was probably
Olave to me still. I still think he has league winning upside potentially. But yeah, you said round three. Right. You're not getting good value. I don't know if any were great values though.
I guess Peoples Jones is based on him going so late and what the upside could be, but that's kind of cheating by putting him in this group with all these other guys. All right, we're going to take another quick break right now. We come back and get more in depth on these second half slow finishers and who we think can maybe bounce back and to bounce back to the level of what their name recognition might be. That's after a quick break here on FFT.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so we're back. So let's start with Nick Chubb. So he was running back 15 per game from weeks 10 through 18, but in his first eight games, he was a monster. 149 carries, 841 yards, 10 touchdowns, 10 catches, 70 yards, average 5.6 yards per carry. And he was on pace for 317 carries, 1,787 yards, and 21 touchdowns. So an absolute star. And then we saw what happened after Deshaun Watson came back. And some of the thought, I think, from the Browns camp was we got to get Deshaun Watson going and make him feel comfortable going into next season when they realized they weren't going to be a playoff team. So Chubb did not have a rushing touchdown in any of his last six games. He did catch a touchdown in week 18, and that was the longest streak of his career without a touchdown on the ground, those six games where he failed to score. So, Dan, when you look at Nick Chubb, obviously Dave gave his reasons why he's very concerned about him, but Dave also said he would take him in the second round. So we'll see where he ends up going. In terms of Chubb next year, which may be his final big season. I think he's going to be 28 in the middle of next season.
Right.
Can he still be that workhorse, potentially lead the NFL in rushing yards type of guy behind this good offensive line with what might be a better offense? Deshaun Watson is Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. Chubb is actually someone out of this entire list who I'm probably more optimistic on than I guess the rest of them. And I think the case for Chubb would be threefold. The first would be, and most important to me would be, that offensive line has all of the same pieces that made up the unit 2 years ago that was the best in the NFL, but they were injured last year and they weren't blocking the same. So that's the first one. They get back on track. They block well. The second one is Kareem Hunt likely to go to another team this offseason. We don't know where he's going to go, but it seems very unlikely he's going to re-sign with the Browns. I know they have players behind him. They might re-sign Johnson. I don't know what they're going to do there. They're always going to add backs, but that takes away a lot of the potential, stealing in the red zone, things of that nature. But most importantly, of course, is can Deshaun Watson take that step forward and look more like that player? If he is, that offense is a lot better, which is only going to help Nick Chubb. So I think there is a case for Chubb potentially, but you brought up a big thing here, which it's hard not to lean on, which he's turning 28.
It's not till December.
Sure. So even 27 though, I don't really, the age they say now is like 26.4. You want it like in between the 26 and 27 season. There starts to be a drop off at this running back position from a fantasy production standpoint. So I don't want to make too many investments in those backs past age 27 season.
And in PPR, clearly again, the reception total, even though when he's
right,
what he was doing was on pace for in his first nine games, still was only on pace for 21 catches. And we know Deshaun Watson just basically
not going to throw to running backs. Yep.
Does not throw to running backs a lot. So again, I think you'll still see him in the round two range. We'll see who they add behind him. But I think one more season, and we did see that the 27-year-old backs this year, for the most part, held up, you know,
Eckler
in somewhat good standing. Derrick Henry was fine. Austin Eckler was fine. You know, Dalvin Cook still okay, not great, but I think Nick Chubb's skill set and how they use him will hopefully still be okay. But we'll see who's the complimentary back there. Dave, I'll give you DeAndre Swift since Dan's not exactly in on him. I know you're a little bit pessimistic as well, but he was running back 17 per game from weeks 10 through 18, but he started out as a monster. Week one, 15 carries, 144 yards, and a touchdown, three catches, 31 yards. That was 26.5 fantasy points against the Eagles, and we thought he was on his way to being that superstar. But he only had two games with more than eight carries the rest of the season. He dealt with the injuries, as we know, once again, the shoulder, the ankle. They were problems. And then week 8 through 18, after return from the injuries, 72 carries, 311 yards, four touchdowns, 40 catches, 312 yards, and two touchdowns. So he's on pace for a 62-catch season, which we love. However, not necessarily sustainable because we know the injuries have been a problem for him each of the last 2 years. So he scored 12.2 or more PPR points in six of the 11 games to close the season. So not horrible, but obviously not superstar caliber like we saw. And again, Jamal Williams may be back in Detroit.
It was like a number two fantasy running back. He averaged 13.1 PPR points per game in his last nine, compared to 14.6 in his first five. You mentioned the super hot start that he got off to. When he came back from that injury, and I think it was multiple injuries in October, he only played 40% of the snaps or more four times in 11 games. He averaged 10.1 touches. That includes 3.6 catches. He averaged 56.6 total yards per game, had six touchdowns. I think that's the expectation now, guys. I would expect him to not play 17 games. Hopefully he plays somewhere in the neighborhood of like 14 games, but he's going to be right around 10, 12 touches a week. He's going to get around three, four catches a game. And he basically needs to score, have a breakaway run or catch in order to come through as a useful part of your fantasy lineup. So I you want to call him a boom or a bust, but I think every week he's going to lean a little bit toward bust compared to boom. Even if Jamal Williams is gone, someone's going to be taking short yardage goal line work. And holy cow, look at the receiving core they have. They might become one of the more pass-friendly teams in this league. Even with Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Goff was pretty good at times last year. He could take a step forward and be consistently good this year. I really like the makeup of their team. And I think Swift's role is complimentary passing down style back.
He could be, though, if he stays healthy. I don't know, 60 catches, but certainly north of 50. And that type of player in PPR, again, you have to factor in the injuries. But, you know, we said this about Dalvin Cook, and he finally stayed healthy. We said this about Austin Eckler, he finally stayed healthy. You know, these guys that once they're able to put it together, and he is entering, I think this is going to be his fifth year, so they have to make a decision on what – or his fourth year. They have to make a decision on what they're going to do. Not that they have a fifth-year option, but it'll be heading into free agency.
Yep.
So they have to make a decision, and could he have the Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, all of a sudden I'm healed as the money's on the line, and that breakout season does happen for him because the talent is definitely there. So I think at the right price, he's still worth buying into. So, Dan, you're out in round four, right, you said?
Yes.
Where's the earliest you would buy in?
Well, you made a point right there that I thought was interesting and something that I hadn't considered, and it can bring me somewhat back in on it, that it's a contract year. And we've seen at this position specifically running back, I tend to buy into the contract year stuff more than any other position. You mean you brought up two great cases, especially Josh Jacobs. But even with all that, I struggle to see the ceiling. I think as Dave broke it down, like, is there a path for him to potentially be the super high reception PPR guy? Maybe, but now we're talking about this offense almost in my mind devolving because they want to be more vertically oriented and use the middle of the field with Jameson Williams there. And then they're going to go back toward kind of dumping it down to the running back or featuring the running back a bunch in the passing game, which really we haven't seen all that much of since Anthony Lynn was there calling those plays. So, and I think Ben Johnson, different kind of, so I don't, that's the ceiling because we don't have the red zone role. So now it just feels like it's either that or the big playability. I don't see the reason to buy into him other than the talent, which hasn't been consistent in my, because he can't stay on the field. So I don't know. It just feels like to me, this is the type of player I just avoid altogether because he's never going to drop anywhere past round four. Right. So, cause someone's going to want to buy in on the potential hype. And so it just won't be me, I don't think.
Here's what Dan Campbell said at the combine. He's a very talented player. He's one of those guys that could take it to the house from anywhere on the field. We thought we had a recipe going into the year. It didn't work out. He got a little bit banged up. But at the end of the year, he started to feel better. His production went up. We're going to start all over from scratch again. Let's find another way to see if we can get him. Let's find another way to see if we can help him stay on the field. What can we do better by him? Because he's too talented to not have out there. He's an explosive athlete. So it sounds like they're going to have limited touches for him again. And to your point, Jared Goff will be the quarterback according to Brad Holmes. They might address the position in the draft, but I don't think that's going to be a starter. So Goff most likely the quarterback there.
Yes.
Let's talk about Chris Olave. So he was wide receiver 31 per game from weeks 10 through 18. And as you alluded to, the Saints became one of the best defensive teams in the NFL and very conservative. So his bad finish was 65 or fewer yards in five straight games and six of his last seven games to end the season. He did suffer a concussion during that stretch as well. Had six or fewer targets in five of his last seven games. From week 10 on, though, New Orleans went 4-4. They ran the fewest plays in the NFL, scored the second fewest points in the NFL, ahead of only the Jets. They were 26 in pass rate, and on defense, they allowed the fewest yards per play in the NFL. So their defense really stepped things up. Offense got very conservative. Again, it was Andy Dalton as the quarterback. And a lot of what Chris Olave did early in the season was clearly based on the start with Jameis Winston. So if Chris Olave does have, let's say, Derek Carr, let's put him as the quarterback in New Orleans. Does he have the chance to be this third-round pick that we've seen him go in some of these drafts? Or is that going to be a little bit too risky because it's Derek Carr, despite what Frank Reich says? I don't think he has 5 good years left. And despite what the Jets say, I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Well, I thought you were going to say, despite what Adam Azer says, I don't think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Well, they're more lofty about Carr than Adam is. So
yeah, somehow.
Dave, just look at the other options that they have. That's
Hey,
I think Carr would be okay for Chris Olave. That's certainly an upgrade from what he had in his first season. And it's basically the combination of he's got to stay healthy and he's got to be part of an offense that doesn't get conservative. And if they've got Derek Carr and they make an investment in Derek Carr, that would suggest that they're not going to start the year being a conservative offense that tries to win with, you know, Taysom Hill gaining 5 yards at a time and leaning on the defense and winning games that are under 30 total points. That sounds like an offense that will try and actually throw, you know, they've got a lot of speed on that team. It's not just Olave. Rashid Shaheed proved that he could play. I'm sure they'll add somebody else. Juwan Johnson has breakout potential. When we talked about second-year tight ends, we did not talk about Juwan Johnson because he was a third-year tight end last year. But he's got some potential. And I think they try and tap into that with Derek Carr as their quarterback, if Carr's their quarterback. To answer the question, James, yeah, he would be a third-round pick. Maybe closer to the end of round three than the beginning, but that's where he'd end up going, and I think I'd be okay with it.
For me,
Dan, we had this conversation on Monday's show about sophomore wide receivers, and Heath is very high on Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Drake London.
Okay.
I think he also has Christian Watson up there as well. So when you look at those four guys, unless I'm missing somebody, I think those are going to be the first four sophomore receivers drafted. How do they rank for you? Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Drake London, Christian Watson.
Well, let's just say for the sake of this argument, Derek Carr does sign with the Saints because to me, that's by far and away the highest ceiling for Chris Olave. He would actually rank as my number one there because one thing about Derek Carr, he did not have a great season last year, but he did throw the ball a lot downfield in intermediate range, and he threw it pretty successfully downfield. That's perfect for Olave as the air yard specialist, as the guy who kind of broke records as a rookie as far as air yards in that single game. He showed something that no one else in this class showed. If Carr goes there, he would be my number one. My number two, it's a really tough decision because I like all four of these players a lot. And I guess with Wilson, it is a lot dependent on what they do at quarterback. Same thing, really. If somehow it's Aaron Rodgers, that's even better. Derek Carr as well. If they can't get either of those two, I downgrade. But I really like both Christian Watson and Drake London. Anyone who's heard me at any point on this show knows that I was ringing the bell for Watson since I wrote up his draft profile last April. That's just the type of talent I believe in. Very DK Metcalf-esque in my mind. Doesn't run at the full route tree, but the ones he runs well, the routes he runs really well. Of course, that does depend on Aaron Rodgers coming back. And then Drake London is a guy who I think has such good film out there, but it was so buried because Marcus Mariota was so freaking bad. And then once they turned over to Desmond Ridder, they ran a pretty conservative offense. So rankings, if I had to do it, I'll probably be higher than consensus on all four, but I would probably go Olave with Carr would be first, highest ceiling. Christian Watson with Rodgers would be second. Garrett Wilson with Rodgers or Carr would be third, and then London last.
Dave, same question. What's the order for you?
Let me just list the order as I have it right now.
Okay.
It's Wilson 1, Olave 2, Watson 3, George Pickens 4, Drake London 5.
Wow.
So I've got Pickens over London. Obviously, the quarterback situations are going to impact four of these five receivers.
Mm-hmm.
The only receiver that we know who his quarterback will definitely be is Pickens.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes without saying that if Atlanta makes a move at quarterback and they bring in somebody serious, whether it's a rookie or, you know, they get one of these good veterans that are out there, London would move ahead of Pickens pretty easily. But if it's Desmond Ridder, I'm not buying. I'm still expecting the Falcons to be more run heavy. I'm expecting Kyle Pitts to be back. That'll hurt the target share that we saw from Drake London toward the end of last season. And then from there, it really just comes down to which quarterback is where. You know, we can talk about Derek Carr's in New Orleans. That's fine. Who's the quarterback in New York? Is it Rodgers? Is it Garoppolo? That stuff will matter. But if it's either of those guys or if it's Carr, those are still great upgrades over what Wilson dealt with last year. And he was over 17 PPR points per game with anybody not named Zach Wilson. So I think he's the most talented of them all. And that's why I've got him first. And I'm expecting an upgrade at quarterback that'll keep him first.
It's going to be interesting. A lot of these guys, a lot of uncertainty. But as we talked about with that show, the guys as rookies that get 900 plus yards receiving.
Yes.
It's pretty impressive what they do as sophomores. Garrett Wilson, I believe, was Wilson and Olave.
And how about this on that note, right? It's Wilson and Olave. We're really excited about them as sophomores. 2 years ago at Ohio State, guess who dominated target share there, dominated yards there with those two on the field?
It was Jackson Olave.
Yep. No, it wasn't. Jackson Smith and Nigba by far. And so almost I think like we're overthinking this, Chad. He'll be a player I'll be targeting too because we can look at all the analytics.
Really
he's going to run a fast 40, but he dominated target share with those two on the same field as him at Ohio State. That to me stands out.
It'll be interesting to see what happened.
Yeah.
What happened to him from 2021 to 2022?
Just injury.
That's what it is?
Yep.
We'll see what happens there. I'm going to skip Donovan Peoples-Jones. Let's talk about Dallas Goedert because DPJ is not somebody I think that – we expected much from, so his second half finish was not necessarily a big surprise, despite the fact they didn't really have a big first half performance as well. All right, so Dallas Goedert. So he only played four games from the weeks 10 through week 18. He's still tight end 12 per game. He played weeks 10, 16, 17, and 18 over that span. Jalen Hurts missed two of those games. So in those four games, though, Dallas Goedert had 19 targets. Devontae Smith had 41 targets. A.J. Brown had 31 targets. So it wasn't exactly the same for him when he came back. Now, the target share in the postseason is a little bit different. Goedert had 18 targets in the three games. Smith had 22 targets in the three games. And A.J. Brown had 22 targets. They were all relatively the same. But in the beginning of the season, when everybody was healthy, Dallas Goedert was still putting up very good numbers. So I know, Dan, you alluded to this. Like, how is the path to success there for him, knowing that we typically look at tight ends that are either one and two in targets on their team, and he's probably not going to have more targets over the course of the season than Devontae Smith or A.J. Brown. But still, Jalen Hurts, as we saw in the Super Bowl, when he needed to make a tough throw, that was the guy he was going to. And hopefully at that point, the shoulder injury was, you know, fully recovered for Dallas Goedert, and he was back to being the Dallas Goedert that we saw. So I don't think he has the same ceiling as Kelce or Andrews if everything goes right for those guys. And then you start to put him in that group. I think he belongs with T.J. Hockenson and George Kittle and Darren Waller and potentially Dalton Schultz wherever he goes. So is Goedert in that group for you, or is he behind that group for you, knowing that, again, there's a lot of mouths to feed in that Philadelphia offense?
He's in that group for me because I still think, like you said, there are so many reasons to like his profile outside of the volume. And you can weigh in the volume versus being on this high-scoring team, this high-functioning offense. But I think for me, it just comes down to, like, he's going to be a fine value pick, especially if you view it in the prism of relative to the tight end position. Because as Dave has said in the past, and I agree with him, and it caused a lot of controversy in my home league because I've thrown out the idea of potentially getting rid of tight end position once Kelce retires because I really liked it, but other people don't like that idea. It's part of fantasy. But it's just a matter of, is that pick worth, like, what – to me, it's a matter of is that pick worth the opportunity cost? Like the player you're giving up when you take a player like Goddard in round five or round six, because it's never going to look bad because he's going to finish probably in the range of that tight end five, tight end six, tight end four. But is it making enough of an impact on your roster for me? I really only want the tight end so I think can make that like Mark Andrews 2021 type impact or what we've seen from Kelce.
Jamie, you mentioned how many targets he had in the playoffs. He averaged what would have been 12 PPR points per game in those three playoff games, which is right in line with where he was in the first nine games of his 2022 season, 12.6. Do you guys know how many tight ends averaged over 12 PPR points per game last year?
I think it was two.
Well, it's more than two.
Okay. 12.
It's four.
Hockenson, Kelce. What am I missing here?
Hockenson and Kelce.
Yeah, those are the easy ones.
Remember, the end of the season counts and the beginning of the season counts.
Kittle. Oh, Kittle. Yeah, that's that.
And that tight end in Baltimore. What's his name?
Oh, Andrews did it? Okay.
Andrews did it. He made it because he had a great start to the season. He had four games in his first six with over 22 PPR points per game. He was an absolute beast.
Yeah, how does Adam put Donovan Peoples-Jones on this list and not Mark Andrews?
But yeah, really. That's
a really good
discuss him. But even out of all those four, right? Like only one of those four was consistent for the whole season.
Correct.
That's and that crazy. Would be Kelce. That's yeah.
Well, Hockenson needed the trade.
Right.
And then even then, it's not like his average really boosted that much.
No, he had two big spike games in there.
Yeah.
He did. But he was a more consistent part of that offense than the one that he was in before. Like you could tell that he was basically the number two pass catcher as soon as he got his feet on the ground in Minneapolis. And then Kittle got the huge boost with Purdy under center. So all that stuff tends to matter. And I think Goddard is probably one of those guys that we'll call safe, that he'll get you around, 10.5 to 12.5 PPR points per game.
But I think that's Dan's point though, is that are you drafting a guy in round six, let's say, for safety, because he's going to be safe at that position, or are you drafting him because he has the chance to win you weeks? And Dallas Goedert is probably not going to be a guy that wins. He may win you a week or two, but he's probably not going to win you 4 or 5 weeks over the course of the season. Now, again, it's the difference between, okay, I know what I'm getting in Dallas Goedert. I'm getting 12 points per game, which is going to be in the upper echelon of tight ends, versus chasing Greg Dulcich or Chig Okonkwo or one of these guys that we
have
the upside for. But again, you're talking about maybe a 5-round difference, because those guys may go in round 10 versus, Goddard going in round 5 or 6.
Sure. I think the bigger question is, who do you take first between Pitts and Goddard? And I'm taking Pitts first because I'm going for that upside. But that's a question that fantasy managers might even want to start with.
Mm-hmm. Well, it probably depends on your roster build, So if you start out with a little bit more risky picks, you might want some safety at one position, knowing that, again, he's going to give you what he's going to give you. And Dave, to your point about the postseason numbers, two of those games were blowouts, so a lot of what he did was, the Super Bowl, which boosted his average, and he was on pace for big games in the playoffs because he was a big part of, like, the Giants game, for example. He had a big
great game against the Giants.
But, in terms of what his numbers were. And so I think that's something to take into account also, because the Eagles could certainly still do that type of get that type of production against other teams. But I think probably, to your question about Pitts versus Goddard, and maybe even Kittle versus Goddard, Waller versus Goddard, all these guys that are going to be drafted around him. It's what what you're getting versus is the upside a little bit capped. And then we don't know what would happen if one of the receivers got hurt. A.J. Brown typically misses games. He didn't miss games last year. Devontae Smith, we know he's not exactly the biggest of receivers. If he misses any time, then maybe Goddard's numbers spike a little bit as a go-to guy for one of the best quarterbacks in football.
That's fair.
All right, last guy we'll talk about here, because we went into a lot on Ramondre Stevenson and Alvin Kamara and with the uncertainties there. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll do two more. So David Njoku in comparison to Dallas Goedert. So he's going to go a little bit later. How much are you going to buy into Njoku with Deshaun Watson? And, knowing that receiving core, Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, maybe a little bit more from David Bell this year. Njoku is still going to be a big part of that Cleveland offense that should be better throwing the ball.
I will like him as a late round tight end who I will begin the season with and hope that he connects with Deshaun Watson. He had two good games with Watson. Good. I mean, this is really good for tight ends. 14 PPR points in week 18 and then 18.7 in week 14. So I'm hoping that that's
no, I think he had a couple drops in the snow.
That's a good point. And he was much better before then. He was better with Brissett. We had outlined during the offseason that Brissett had a tendency to lean on tight ends. We didn't necessarily see that with Watson, but he still had a couple of really good games. That's the type of fantasy tight end that he is. It'll be sporadic. You'll If you like the schedule to begin the season, great. If the Browns don't really add anything among their pass catchers, it'll make him more alluring. But he's overall in the season, he averaged 10 PPR points per game. That's the type of guy that you're going to go after in the double-digit rounds.
So, Dan, just to tie in your philosophy here, would you rather wait on a David Njoku, an Okonkwo, a Dolchitz, those type of guys, or would you, you know, go for those that middle group of Goddard, Kittle, Pitts? I don't know if Pitts factors in because of the upside, but Goddard, Kittle, Waller, Schultz, depending on where he ends up, those type of guys.
Yeah, it's always been my philosophy at tight end to either go big or go home kind of thing.
No. It's great or late. Great or late.
Great or late. I like that. Boy,
put it on a T-shirt. Yeah.
Great or late. So my issue with that strategy was I tried that last year, and I was heavy on great last year. I wanted to get the edge, and I had some Kelce, but I also had a lot of Pitts and Andrews. And having a lot of Pitts and Andrews last year was not a fun experience. So I think I'm even leaning toward the late. Go later, just go home type of thing this year, because I'm probably not going to get Kelce in most drafts. He's going top three, top five range. So yeah, for me, it's definitely to go for the late round flyer, play the waiver wire, play the matchups on a week-to-week basis over the middle ground, just because I think when I'm taking those guys in the middle ground, and even Goddard, I think, isn't going to go like round six. I think he'll creep up to like round four or five this year based on scarcity. I am giving up potential Amon-Ra St. Browns every time I do it. I'd rather take the swing on finding the next Amon-Ra St. Brown.
It's probably more Christian Watson, but I know what you're saying. You know, one of those.
Yeah, I guess. You know, yeah. Young, but Amon-Ra was probably around 4 or 5 last year.
Right. No, I know. Yeah. I know what you're saying. But like, you know, just trying to put in context of what we've been talking about, you know,
for this year. Yeah.
Those guys are going to go in that type of range. All right. Last guy we'll look at here is Jalen Waddle, who in first, you know, start of the season. This is Dave's number. So 18.2 PPR points per game in his first 9 games, 11.9 in his final 8. And obviously that was when Tua was dealing with the concussion situation and missed a lot of those games. And so, Dan, you alluded to this, you know, just the disparity about how good he was with Tua, and obviously the numbers bear that out. So assuming Tua is back, and let's say he's going to – if I tell you right now, Tua's playing 14 games, Jalen Waddle is pick what for you?
Tua's playing 14 games, and Jalen Waddle is pick back end round 2.
Yeah.
Maybe mid round 2 for me. He's right around the range of where T. Higgins was coming off the board in last August in drafts, and I was happy to get T. Higgins there. It's a similar situation for me. Great. I think with Tua playing 14 games, that off, especially with Mike McDaniel coming back, that offense will be pretty similar to what we saw, maybe even better with more time in that system for those two. Jalen Waddle to me is a top five talent for me at the wide receiver position. I'm a very high on his overall skill set. So yeah, to me, I'm fine taking him in that range.
All right, Dave, Tua's playing 10 games. When are you taking Jalen Waddle?
Ooh.
Now I'm thinking it's got to be like a full round later, rounds 3 to 4, somewhere in that range.
So Jalen Waddle, I mean, as we know, he's tied to the health of Tua, or potentially with let's say Andy Dalton's the backup there. Does that change things for you?
That's bad for me. I have but bad.
We've seen Dalton in a lot of different systems.
I know, but
yeah,
he's never really been, except for when he had AJ Green, and that was kind of just throwing back shoulders and balls up down the field and deep post. Like, he's never really been an air it out type of quarterback.
So who's the most ideal
backup?
Patrick Mahomes.
I think Jameis Winston is.
I was waiting for you to say Aaron Rodgers. No.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I think Jameis Winston. Dave brought it up earlier. I really feel like Jameis Winston is the ideal backup there. For fantasy, obviously.
It's one of those things where you want someone who's going to be aggressive, and
yes,
you know, he's certainly that type of quarterback. So Waddle just continued to follow news. Again, Chris Greer saying at the combine that they're going to factor in his health when they look at his long term, you know, future. But he's going to be the Dolphin starter heading into 2023, and that will clearly hopefully help Jalen Waddle as opposed to hurt Jalen Waddle. So there's your second half slumpers. And hopefully they will be better in 2023. Adam Mazur will be back next week. We will be back as well, wrapping up a lot of stuff from the combine. You guys excited to watch all the activities in shorts and t-shirts?
I'm nope. Such a nerd that I am excited to watch the combine. I somehow watch this every year.
Yeah, I've been watching it for so long that
it's not that exciting, but
right.
We'll see how Bryce Young does. He looked small in those pictures.
He did look small in those pictures. Yeah.
We'll see how he does. All right. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Again, we'll be back next week wrapping up the combine. Lots of fun content for you. Free agency is coming up. NFL draft is coming up. And we'll have you covered here on Fantasy Football Today. For Dan, for Dave, I'm Jamie. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.